through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Welcome into Jake and Stacy. Jake Heaps, Stacy Ross here with you guys. We are recapping, not just recapping the Seahawks win, but also looking at what it means. Here's my favorite point. And Jake, you made this morning. I'm going to jump right into it because I love it so much. What the Seahawks did defensively Monday night, and I know people will say that they played a weak offense, has more to do with Seattle than it does with how the Eagles played. Jake, you're the one that brought this up. I love this point because it goes against what I'm hearing most. When I was hearing complaints about the game, complaints about a win, people were saying, well, the Eagles' offense is so bad. Guess what? They had a great day against them. Jake, what did you see? I'll start with you.
Well, boo-hoo. Right? I'm sorry, but boo-hoo. Okay? You want to complain about a win? You want to complain about the fact that the Seahawks went into Philly and they accomplished the mission. They went in and accomplished the mission. That mission was to come out with a win. And that's ultimately what the NFL is all about. A road win in any situation is a big deal. They're 8-3. They're back on top of the NFC West. And defensively, guess what, Stacey? The Seahawks, they treated like the Eagles' offense was. Mm-hmm. They beat up on Carson Wentz and that Eagles' offense like they were supposed to. And they didn't give up 350-plus yards passing to a below-average quarterback like they have done this year and they've done in the past. No, they shut down this Eagles' offense all game long. Outside of a bad missed call from an obvious Carson Wentz intentional grounding, Stacey, I don't know what happened. My personal theory on that is that the referee on the sideline who's in control of the line of scrimmage, who's literally standing on the sideline, mm-hmm. just momentarily went blind. Like he just, out of nowhere, just a freak accident.
It happens to the best of us.
He didn't see it. And, you know, he just assumed that Carson Wentz threw it past the line of scrimmage. That is the only explanation that they would not call that a intentional grounding.
I mean,
but they were very nitpicky about Russell Wilson's intentional grounding call.
It was lame.
That to me, it was very lame. And that led to the score at the end of the half. They dominated that first half. We're talking about the Seahawks defense. The Seahawks defense that's been historically one of the worst defenses in the NFL. Yeah, that defense, they had 5 3-and-outs to start this game. 5! I don't care who you're playing. That is impressive. That should be commended. And I think that they did what they were supposed to do last night.
And check this out, Jake. Let's talk about total yardage. And by the way, on that completely missed, egregious failure to call the intentional grounding, Jake, I mean, let's be real. Every football head knows that the line of scrimmage is actually a 4-yard gray area. I've always said that. So it really technically was within the line of scrimmage. It's just something that you kind of get when you get to that advanced NFL level. I don't have time to explain it right now. We'll talk about it during the break.
But in the rule book.
Yeah. That's clear. Let's talk about total yardage, okay? Because this is an area where the Seattle Seahawks have struggled all year, and I know that some of those players might get kind of salty and defensive if you say that and you mention that to them, and I would
Jamal
too.
Adams.
Don't get me wrong, I would too. But guess what? That's been the facts, and the reason that people keep questioning it is because they had and have too much talent to be doing that. This isn't a pool full of bad players that are allowing big gains in 400-plus yard games. This is a pool of, you've got 2 All-Pros, you've got some Pro Bowlers, you've got veterans, and they were allowing that many yards, and it made no sense. That's why people were so confused. But guess what? They've been able to turn that around in the last 3 weeks. With this performance specifically, Jake, so the defense allowed just 250 yards. That's not just their lowest total of the season. Mm. It's also one of the best games any team has had against the Philadelphia Eagles. And guess who else that includes, Jake? It includes the Los Angeles Rams, who allowed 363 yards. It includes the Baltimore Ravens, who allowed 364. It includes the Pittsburgh Steelers, who allowed 336, and the San Francisco 49ers, who allowed 267. I don't care if those teams were dealing with injuries or whatever happened at the time. This was an objectively good performance by your defense, no matter
Absolutely.
The opponent.
Absolutely. And you still have to go and get it done. And yeah, look, the Eagles, That was one of the worst offenses I had seen.
That interception was so bad.
Curtis, what did you say on Twitter last night? That was just mean.
It looked like Carson Wentz and Quandre Diggs had practiced that route before.
It's just mean, Curtis. It's just mean.
There was a
but
moment.
It's true.
No, listen.
It's true.
This off defense has at times struggled with coverage and too much cushion so often that I very briefly, split second, thought, how'd that guy get so wide open? They were playing so well. How'd you let this guy get so wide? Oh, no, that's Quandre Diggs. Okay, Quandre Diggs. It's an interception. We're all good.
Correct. And the confidence that Carson threw that with, Carson Wentz threw that with, I thought for sure that was going to be a touchdown. But no, it was to Quandre. As Curtis said, him and Quandre Diggs have chemistry like I've never seen it.
They were out there pregame, running routes, getting
this
that chemistry
Montana
working.
Rice kind of stuff
Wentz
right now.
Wentz to Diggs.
It's unreal.
That's right. And this offensive line that the Eagles had, they were atrocious. The receiving core that they had out there really didn't threaten the Seahawks
at all.
But that, again, goes to my point. They didn't play soft and conservative and sit back and let Carson Wentz feel comfortable and pick them apart and hey, we don't care how many yards we give up. No, they were aggressive. They set the tone. Stacey, that was one of the things I talked about yesterday. Set the tone. And that's what they did defensively. They set the tone. I loved that Shaquille Griffin, Ugo Amadi, you know, Trey Flowers gave up a play or two. But for the most part, they were in press man coverage the entire time. I loved that. And so you treated your opponent like you should. And Stacey, defensively, they did not play down to their opponent whatsoever. Mm. Now, on the offensive side of the ball, I think that's where people kind of have a bad taste in their mouth and feeling like this offense didn't get the job done. But the reality is they're a couple plays away from completely blowing that game out.
That's
DK Metcalf catches that touchdown at the end of the corner. That play alone gives you a massive separation. And the thing that I don't understand is, you never were trailing in this game. You never were threatened with the opportunity for the Eagles to really get in the game. Even when they scored the touchdown at the end of the half or late in the game, I never felt worried about that game. I felt like they were in control. The only thing that I didn't love about that game was the offensive line, how they played. And at some point, I did feel like they played extremely conservative on offense. But they played to the game. And Pete Carroll, as we have famously known him for years, is if his defense is playing as well as they did last night and are controlling the game, he's going to cater to that a little bit. And he will play conservative based off of that. And I think that showed up.
And we are going to keep exploring that because that's an important point. And exploring this offensive performance, whether or not we're concerned at all or whether or not we're fine with it. First, though, this hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Jake Heaps, Stacey Ross here talking about the defensive performance from the game. Got to go to cut number five. This is Jamal Adams.
Due to COVID, you know, obviously we didn't have a chance to, you know, do OTAs. And then obviously for myself, I got traded late. And then, you know, Dunlap came over and certain guys – that haven't played together as a whole. You know, it takes time, man. And, you know, it's a new system. I'm still learning, believe it or not. And everybody's out there, you know, feeding off one another and just flying around the ball. I think our communication has been, you know, phenomenal. We've been practicing, you know, well as a unit, and we just got to keep going, man.
Now, this isn't an excuse, but you did see a record number of defenses well through the first half of the season allow 400-plus yards per game. I mean, the lack of an offseason is something that affected defensive chemistry. The Seahawks probably waited a little too long to have that accountability meeting and get on the right track, but they did. And it's not just the defense as a whole. Jake, you said Jamal Adams had his best game as a Seahawk.
Yeah, I really did. I really felt that last night. I mean, he didn't get the exact totals that I was predicting yesterday in my bold take
Monday
way prediction,
too
but he got really close. I mean, he didn't get the interception, which would have been the perfect capstone to my prediction, but he did get a sack. He had a tackle for loss. He had right around 10 tackles. I think he had 9 in the game, and he made his presence felt, and he was letting the Eagles defense know that he was there. And, you know, he had mentioned that he'd been playing with one shoulder over the last couple of weeks, and you could see him play healthy, and that gave me a lot of excitement, and it should give the Seahawks fans a lot of excitement because he's getting better. And guess what? Yeah, his coverage grade in Pro Football Focus hasn't been stellar. He got called out by that by Joe Fan, and he didn't love that. And I'm sure we'll talk about it at some point during the show. But you know, Jamal Adams was a little testy in his press conference after the game, and I love that fire. But he's improving, and he has the elite talent to be one of the game's legitimate game changers.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw that last night. You saw that ability last night on multiple levels. In that soundbite, have you noticed that Jamal Adams has said, believe it or not, like,
really?
Believe it or not, you guys might think that I can do everything great, and normally I can, but like, I haven't played man coverage very much, or believe it or not, I haven't done this. I haven't, you know, been a part of this defense very long. So if you believe it or not, you know, Jamal Adams is human, and Jamal Adams does need some time to continue to grow and develop, and I think that you're seeing that. And that's ultimately, Stacey, what we talked about. And what we have been talking about is that these next four games are an opportunity to keep building and keep getting better. And that's what they're doing. And that's what I walked away from this Eagles game feeling good about. Yeah, there's certain things that you could poke holes in, no question. And there's certain things that you could not be happy about with their performance in the game, sure. But overall, they are building. And defensively, they're taking the right steps in the right direction.
That's absolutely right. And both of us felt that way yesterday when we were all talking about it. When we were on Cairo 7 talking about that too, by the way, and I don't need to get into it now. All I'll say is that my mother, who was watching it, her first comment about our appearance on Cairo 7 was that Jake looked very mm-hmm. nice in his tie. And I was like, Mom.
Where's the lie?
Where's the compliment of me?
Oh.
Mother.
Oh, that,
Jake
that,
is not your son. What's going on here?
You know, I was looking rather dapper last night. I'm glad your mother noticed. I worked really, really hard on that. You know, Brooke, okay. I have to give all the credit to her for the wardrobe pick.
Yeah.
The reality is that your mom just really makes me feel good about myself.
Like
she could be my hype person. If she could be my hype person, that'd
Joe
be great.
Hayes.
I know she should be yours. I know Joe Hayes should be your hype person.
Nope.
But I might bring her into my camp. You know, Russell has his camp. I have my camp.
That's
I have
exactly
my peoples.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
But we were talking about how this was a great building block for the defense, and they needed it because this isn't a defense that could jump right into the final at the end of the quarter and ace it. This is a defense that needed a couple pop quizzes in the middle, right? This is a defense that needed to go to some study groups, some less intense, less things at risk moments where it could kind of build that up. And this was a really good one. They aced this pop quiz in my mind. One thing that I also want to get to right before we get to three questions is the number of sacks, because we talked about the other day, what would we need to see from this defense, Jake, in order to feel good about it, to feel like this step forward was legit? Because we loved what they did against Arizona. Small sample size, though, right? They had 9 weeks of struggling, some good plays, but relatively inconsistent, and then a great game against Arizona. We wanted to see them get, I said, at least 3 sacks. You said they could get 5, and they ended up getting 6. And the best thing about that, Jake, was that that was from multiple guys. And obviously, mm-hmm. Carlos Dunlap, I'm going to say, has been the big turning point here. Whether or not he's been responsible for the bulk of those sacks, the fact that this team, and we thought that their pass rush was the biggest concern heading into the season, the fact that this team is now tied for 7th in sacks, like, credit to what they've been able to do of late. That's a phenomenal turn.
Mm-hmm. It is a phenomenal turn, and I do believe that Carlos Dunlap was the player to spark this. Now, one thing to note is that he did leave the game mm-hmm. with a sprained foot, a sore foot, as Pete Carroll described it. So that one, to me, is concerning, and I hope that it's nothing serious because he has been such a factor for this defense, and he has been a difference maker both as a leader and also on the field with his production. It has made everybody else better. But my favorite part, Stacey, is 6 sacks. Really, you had 7 guys involved, and you could see the collective unit working together. Like, for example, Rasheem Green was able to get the sack on Carson Wentz, but it was the tandem of Rasheem Green's hustle slicing through the offensive line, but it was also Benson Mayoa coming underneath that stunt and really forcing Carson Wentz to stay still in the pocket rather than stepping up into the pocket. So they worked very well in all their pressure packages, their twists and stunts, and as Pete Carroll said on with Danny and Gallant earlier, they could have had 10 sacks. They didn't execute a couple of them. Mm-hmm. They were almost there. They almost were able to get home. But overall, they are really building towards something. And when you have guys that are feeling confident and playing with their hair, like their hair's on fire as a defensive line, as a pass rush, that's where you really start to make a difference. And I think that is something that's going to hold up over time as they continue to keep getting better on this. And, Stacey, I want to point to this. The 360 texts in on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. It was Philadelphia. You guys are a joke.
Hey, guess what?
Guess what?
I don't care.
Guess what? Stop crying. Stop crying because this was a great win. This was a great win for this team. There's obviously things to correct, and we are going to get through that the rest of the show. But overall, they accomplished the mission. 8-3, back on top of the NFC West, and they were able to build upon defensively, which is the most concerning unit out of anyone. They were able to build and start to grow, and you really see this group really maturing before our eyes, and we'll see how they continue to progress. They haven't arrived. They're not fully there yet. But, Stacey, even you're starting to buy this
turn. I know.
Turn.
I am. I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of the negative one, the pessimist usually on this show. But I have bought into this turn. I still want to see more in order to think they're a Super Bowl contender. But I legitimately believe they have taken a step forward, several steps forward on defense. Also, that was just a sound of parent Jake speaking. That was dad Jake, dad of two small children, being like, stop pouting. Stop. I will turn this car around. Stop complaining that it was Philadelphia. I'll turn the show around right
true.
Now.
True. That is very true. I will end this, your precious field trip right now, in the words of Chris Farley.
Let's get to three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
What's the dumbest question you could ask? What?
Question one, Jamal Adams certainly positive about his pass coverage last night. How did you guys rate Jamal Adams' pass coverage abilities?
Oh, Mr. Joe was getting it last night from Jamal Adams. Oh, man. gotta love it, though. I here's the thing. I never love seeing that happen to media members who are just doing their job. And, yeah, they're going to ask you hard questions. And if you don't like having the hard questions asked of you, well, then step up your game, right? Step up your game. But the part I don't mind is I don't mind having players that are willing to be boisterous in when they have big moments and have bravado and have this attitude of me against the world or us against the world. And I think that's what Jamal Adams brings to this team. And that has been missing from this team over the last two seasons since really Richard Sherman has been gone. And I don't mean that Jamal Adams is exactly like Richard Sherman, but you've missed that kind of edge to you. In terms of his overall grade, in terms of pass coverage, Curtis, I thought that he had a much better night last night. However, there were two moments where he had two misses in coverage that led to big gains.
Mm-hmm.
One was in man coverage at the end of the game where he wasn't as sticky as he needed to be on a 10-yard out route. And then he didn't finish the tackle, which was worst of all, and that led to a big play. And then there was another one in zone coverage where he is caught in between. Am I supposed to go to the flat? Am I supposed to take this seam route? And he didn't do either. He was really caught in the middle, and he didn't commit to either one. And in that particular coverage, I know I've played this defense and practiced against this defense, that he was supposed to have that seam route or at least hold on to it longer, so that Quandre Diggs has a better chance of making that play. So really, I only saw two misses that led to big gains. Outside of that, I thought this was an improved game for Jamal Adams.
Completely agree. One of those same misses, the one on Goddard in the fourth quarter, you could tell that Jamal Adams knew it too. We're not telling him anything he doesn't know. Like, he shook his head after and was clearly frustrated. But I even liked him getting his hands on the ball in the end zone for that Hail Mary. Yes, it's a Hail Mary, and there's a ton of Philly and Seahawks players all clustered together, but I mean, he was the one that helped deflect it. It was caught for a touchdown pass, but I mean, that was still a pretty impressive play to me personally. Otherwise, I think it was a pretty decent game. I also want to say Joe is a friend of mine. I'm sorry that he had to take that, but he does have, we do a game night. His roommate is mutual friends. He works here, so everyone knows everyone. And so we're going to plan a game night, and I wanted to extend an open invitation. I'll need to do this. I told Joe, hey, I invited Jamal Adams. I hope that's okay. I just figured it would be a good moment for you guys to kind of hash this out.
Sick.
Air it out.
Joe might call in sick.
Next.
Number two.
Is Russell Wilson's MVP candidacy officially over?
Good question. Most likely is what I'm going to say. Russell would have to really tear it up in the remaining games on the Seahawks schedule, and particularly in the final two games against the Rams and the 49ers, if he wanted a chance at it. He doesn't lead the league in touchdowns anymore. He's gotten passed up in yards, and I think he's gotten passed up in overall quarterback rating because Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes have continued to play very, very well, and their offensive philosophy has been very clear-cut. The reason why I think it's most likely is because Pete Carroll appears to really have influence on this offense right now in terms of its approach. I'm just going to be honest, and we'll talk about this a little bit more. I am worried and concerned that there is a possible overcorrection that is happening here on the offensive side of the ball, that you were one of the most dynamic offenses in the NFL for the majority of this year. You go through a bad stretch of turnovers, and then you completely flip the script and change and go back to what you were. And to me, that is not winning Super Bowl football with the roster that you have. You still need Russell Wilson to play at a high level. This still needs to go through Russell Wilson. And so I'm curious to see how that goes. If they open things up and they let the game dictate how the quote-unquote balance is going to go, I think Russ could have a shot, but it's an outside shot at best.
Yeah, I think it's over, and that's not because I don't expect, you know, Russell Wilson to have phenomenal games. I think he's going to continue to be the star on this team, on this one of the league's best offenses, leading them down this stretch. It's not him that I doubt. It's that Patrick Mahomes is already a favorite in that kind of conversation. You're already fighting an uphill battle going against him in that offense. And now that he's taken the lead in a national conversation about that MVP award, it's hard to see him giving it up. It's like having a two-game lead, and you're like, well, they got to drop one first. He's got to drop a couple games first.
Number three.
Which era of Seahawks primetime games do you prefer? The early Pete years with more blowouts and fewer games, or the recent years of more games with closer finishes?
This is a really good question. I had to think long and hard about this question, Curtis, because it has been really fun to watch the games that we've seen over the last couple of years, more primetime games, more opportunities at it, and there have been some amazing, amazing finishes, particularly this season. But I'm going to go with the dominance. I'm going to go with the lesser games. It was so much fun to see the Seahawks physically dominate their opponents in primetime, being brash, being bold, calling out everyone after the games for the disrespect given or the lack of recognition of the team and its players. That was a fun ride. And, you know, even Pete Carroll, I think, had a different swag about him when it came to those primetime opportunities early in the LOB era.
Now, Jake, would you trade that security of watching those blowout games for getting this offense today, knowing it might come at the expense of some stars on defense?
I mean,
it's tough.
It is tough. I mean, you still need a franchise quarterback, right?
Yeah.
Like that's the thing. You have to have a franchise quarterback in order for this whole thing to go and for it to work. So as long as Russell Wilson is a part of the picture, as long as you have that as your centerpiece, it doesn't really matter. But I do think that right now this offense is in at least what they've done in the first half of the season. That's the offense that they should be still moving forward.
This is Jake and Stacey. Mike Salk joins us next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost here with you. We're joined by Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Seahawks get another win. Mike, what'd you think?
I thought they were good. It's really hard, I think, to come up with any sort of definitive take on how good or bad the Seahawks are after watching them play against an offense as bad as that. That's one of the worst NFL offenses I've ever seen. And I don't mean to take anything away from the Seahawks. They did what they needed to do. Jake, I think you're off your rocker the way you were mad about the Seahawks running the ball late in the game. You're off your rocker. All they needed to do was end the game.
Off my rocker.
Yes, you are.
We have 6 minutes left to go, and we're going to run the ball three straight times into a brick wall.
Yep.
For no reason.
Because the minute and a half, 2 minutes, they take off.
The game.
Don't need it against the Eagles. You don't need it.
Zero killer instinct.
You're watching that team.
You play like that. That's a mentality. That is not in one game off. That's not a one-off game. That is a philosophy that we have seen over the years with Pete Carroll and this team, that if that mindset creeps back in and you start to really try to rely on this defense, I am concerned, Salk, that when you get to the playoffs, you get to the Rams, you get to these better teams, that mentality is going to cost you games.
Well, I understand that. I understand that argument about the mentality, and I'll give you a little bit of credit for that. But this was not a game. You're not playing the Rams.
Thank you for the little credit.
But you're not playing the Rams. You're not playing the Packers. You're not even playing an NFL quarterback. You look like you were playing the poor kid in Denver this past weekend who couldn't throw the ball. I mean, Carson Wentz is broken. That offense is an atrocity. By the time you were getting mad about the team running the ball at the end of the game, the only way you could lose that game was by throwing a pick. There was no reason to be aggressive. All you needed to do was take the time off the clock, let the Eagles screw it up, give it back to you, and move on with your life. The only way you lose that game at that point is through some sort of a fluke interception. Quite frankly, the only reason you were even in the game at all was because of the missed intentional grounding call. It's one of the worst calls I've ever seen. So I think Pete played it right. At the end of that game, you just needed to end. And whatever they could do to run time off that clock, play it safe, and just let that game come to a close was the way to go.
Well, you and I will not see eye to eye on that in this situation. But, Salk, you talk about how broken Carson Wentz was in that offense. I personally, it was so weird to listen to that broadcast last night. I don't know about you, but make up your freaking minds, okay? Make up your mind. Do you think Carson Wentz is not the problem, or he is the problem? They went back and forth on that a million times.
Can it be both,
what
though?
Is it in your mind?
I think Carson Wentz is the problem, and so is everyone else. I mean, like, I think that offense is bad, but I guess if you're forcing me to choose one or the other, I'll choose him. The opening possession of that game, he threw three balls to open receivers that were not close. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, it was bizarre. Yeah. The pick, Stacey, you were mentioning it earlier, that pick was to nobody.
It's the ugliest thing I've ever seen.
There's no one near it other than Diggs. I mean, like, there were some throws in there that were bizarre. And then, oh, by the way, the reason I think you start talking about why the coaching staff and the rest of the offense is problematic, A, the offensive line is bad, so he's constantly under pressure. B, nobody wins battles on the outside, so you don't really have any receivers that can win. But then all of a sudden Hurts comes in, and despite the fact they seem to have no real plan for him, he threw a dart, complete 6-7 yards, and like, okay, quick, get him out of here. That was successful. Let's get Wentz back in there so that he can run around and, like, you know, maybe get hurt. I think that's what they want. They want the guy to get hurt so that they have no excuse but to put in Hurts because Wentz is broken.
Oof. It's bizarre. And you know, I personally, my overall thought is it is both this year, but I think it's more of what is surrounding Carson Wentz than it is Carson. I think that what's happened to him is sad. I think what's happened to him with this offensive line and the lack of weapons that he's dealt with over the last two seasons has been sad.
You think he got David Card?
He's on track to be David Card.
Yeah.
This is the byproduct of it. And quite honestly, if I was Carson Wentz and if I was his agent, I would be doing everything that I could to try and get a trade. If I had to take less money to in my contract,
I don't think you can
go,
do that,
to get out of
Philly. Like, I think it's stuck, and that's the problem. He's untradeable because, A, who's going to take on that amount of money, and B, all the dead cap room.
How is that not on the franchise?
It is on them. They chose this guy and spent an inordinate amount of money, and they're going to be stuck with him now moving forward. But you know what? There were open receivers in that game. I mean, I think that's why it's difficult to point at the Seahawks defense and say, okay, they got it all right, because if a bunch of those passes had been completed to open receivers, how different does the game look?
But this Eagles offense has been more successful against better defenses statistically.
Yeah, and the Seahawks, again, I thought they played well. Their defense, I mean, Carlos Dunlap's made an enormous difference. In terms of, did he talk about Dunlap this morning?
Yeah, we're going to get our next bit, 11:45, coming up here, just so you guys know. We're going to get into what Pete Carroll had to say on the Pete Carroll Show, an exclusive interview with us this morning until we get to that press conference. He did have an update on Carlos Dunlap. He's getting an MRI, so okay. We don't have an update yet.
He's a difference maker, man. I mean, yeah. Since he has shown up here, they are a completely different defense, and I think it's not just what he does in particular. It's what he allows everybody else to do. He allows Benson Mayoa to be another option instead of the primary option. He allows Rasheem Green to be another option and a backup instead of the primary guy. He closes up the pocket, which allows, you know, Jaron Reed and Puna Ford to rush up. Like, everybody has been made better just by his presence. And so, you know, as I look at that defense right now, I might argue he's the most important person on it just based on what he's done for everybody else around him.
Is he the better trade then so far?
Oh, yes. There's not a question.
Really?
Oh, not a question. You didn't give up anything for him, and you got a guy that has completely changed your defense. Jamal Adams, while at times has played well, and obviously the sacks and everything else have been great, I think you got a real question about whether or not you want to spend all the big money on him, and you kind of have to because you spent so much capital.
Why would you have a question about it?
You sure you want to make him the highest paid safety in the game based on what you've seen so far this year?
I mean, he's helping your biggest area of need.
You have a team that is giving up they're the worst pass defense of all time. He's one of the four members of that secondary.
Sure, but what if you had better corners? You can't blame the breakdown in the secondary is four people, not just him.
And he's in your secondary,
his coverage hasn't been great.
And if you were the 22nd team in the league in terms of, okay, fine, you're dead last. So there's some real questions, I think, to ask there. He gets to the quarterback. I'm not saying you don't sign him, but there's a very real question mark about it. On the other hand, Carlos Dunlap has been a revelation so far. I think he's been awesome.
Yeah, I'm real nervous about that, Andrew.
Hey Salk, real quick, I wanted to ask you this. What did you make of DK Metcalf's slight that he took from Jim Schwartz?
Yeah.
So Jim Schwartz coming in, trying to be the nice guy and try to give
him
compliments.
That's what I think, right?
And all DK Metcalf, but here's the thing that's so funny about it, is sometimes we all have well-intentioned comments or we have a joke that we hope lands and we think's going to land, and it just doesn't.
I can't
and
identify.
All DK heard was, oh, so you don't think I'm good enough to be Megatron.
And that, I'm sure that's not what he meant, right? He just meant like, hey, you're on your way to being Megatron. Congratulations. Like, you've got a lot of Megatron in him. Keep it going, man, and you're going to get there one day.
I liked DK's Michael Jordan, and I took that personally.
Well, but the thing about DK that I think is interesting, he has become, that is a clear number one elite wide receiver in every way, whether it's the skill on the field, the dropped balls, which tend to come with those elite guys because they also don't let it affect them and they right back there wanting the ball. And then the way he interpreted that slight, I just think it's interesting not only to use it as the chip on the shoulder, but also to burn Jim Schwartz with it. That's rare. It's not strange to hear somebody like use words against them, but to straight up burn one of the other coaches in the league over it, that's got some guts. I kind of appreciate
that. Yeah, I will say that Brady Henderson, friend of the station of ESPN, is the one that clarified, are you talking about Jim Schwartz?
Yes.
So initially, DK didn't say it was Jim,
so,
but he did
so
say,
funny.
Yes, sir.
Good job by Brady.
Yeah.
Yeah, DK couldn't have made that more obvious
no,
if Brady
no.
calls him on him. He's like, dang it. Yes,
I mean Jim Schwartz.
All right.
Man,
thanks,
how
Mike.
Good was DK, though?
Do you guys have
way?
A new podcast drop?
We already recorded it this morning. Yes, coming out tonight. Immediate reaction to the game, what we think, what we know. We got a lot going
on.
So BrockandSalkPodcast.com.
That's BrockandSalkPodcast.com. Thanks, Mike. All right. Let's play some of those cuts from the Pete Carroll Show. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
You're going to hear from Seattle's head coach two times today. The next time will presumably be his press conference with NFL facilities closed. I'm not sure exactly when that's going to be taking place, but he'll have a press conference reflecting on this game. But he's already got an exclusive interview with 710 ESPN. That was during his Pete Carroll show with Danny and Gallant this morning. We're going to get to some of those cuts right now. So let's just start with the injury updates. I know that that's the one that everyone's worried about. Jake and I were talking about the importance of Carlos Dunlap with Mike Salk. And honestly, you know, when we opened the top of the show talking about this defensive turn. Hopefully this isn't serious, but here's cut number six, Carroll on Dunlap.
Yeah, he's got a sore foot, and we didn't know what it is. It's something on the bottom of his foot, and he's his 6:45 a.m. MRI will know a lot more. He was kind of upset because we got in an hour early, and he's got to wait around for his MRI.
So just a behind-the-scenes kind of peek that they had to pre-tape this, I'm guessing, given the facility's closing. So presumably they will have results soon. Didn't at the time, but getting an MRI makes me kind of nervous.
Yeah, him having to get an MRI should make everybody nervous. I mean, anytime you're having to be in that situation, it's not positive. But also, it could just be an exploratory situation where, hey, they're trying to find answers. It may be something. It may be nothing, right? And an MRI just brings a little bit more clarity to that. So hopefully the MRI comes back negative, that there's nothing really there, and that this is a recovery that will be quick for Dunlap, because as we had highlighted before, he's just such an impact to this defense, and I think that this guy has made the world a difference, and to be without him, they could survive over the next couple weeks, but I don't think they thrive in the way that they did versus the Eagles. I don't believe you generate six sacks, almost have 10, without Carlos Dunlap a part of that lineup, and that's how much he has mattered and how much of a difference maker he's been.
Yeah, it's clear just having him there has had an impact on the stat sheet, even when he's not accounting for those sacks and when he's not accounting for those hits. It's made a huge difference. It is hard to believe that that's not two correlating things, the arrival of Dunlap via trade and then the Seahawks' turn in their pass rush. Another thing that we got to talk about, DK Metcalf having a career night, 177 yards, almost had a touchdown there that slipped through his hands, really the only blemish on an otherwise stellar day for him. But one of my favorite moments, Jake, I don't know if you're going to like this or not. I said I didn't want another fight, even though I wanted a fight last time. I said this time, like, okay, I don't need to predict a fight. We don't need a fight every week. But there was one. Cut number two, Pete Carroll saying DK getting under the opponent's skin.
They're trying to stand up to him. He's got a real factor about him. You know, he's so physical, and he knows it, and he gets after him, and he's unusual in that regard. The guys don't like it, so it's kind of fun. The good part about it is DK knows what's going on, and he's really poised, and he's not getting himself in any trouble at all. He's just kind of he's stirring it up a bit.
Now, I think sometimes receivers, especially elite big receivers, will get that diva kind of label. It's just something that goes along with the job. I don't think this is a diva moment. I know some people get worried about it when a receiver starts being a part of stories, especially national stories. I think this is just a guy who is aggressive and good at getting under people's skin and fiery, and I'm completely fine with that. And for the record, Pete Carroll sounded very fine with it too.
DK's a beast. Well, he's fine with it because he knows DK's in control. He knows DK knows exactly what he's doing, and that the reality of it is, why are these guys getting so mad at DK? Why has he caused so many fights and he's getting under people's skin? Is because, think about it. If you've played any pickup basketball game or any game just in general, and you've got that one try-hard person that you're playing with who's taking the game, it could be a board game that's just taking it way too seriously, or you're in basketball on the court, and this guy is just all over the place. He is fighting you on rebounds. He is in your grill defending you as you're trying to, you know, dribble the ball or drive down the lane, like unnecessarily going hard. That's what DK has done. Mm-hmm. DK's 22 years old. This is his second year in this league, and there's a lot of guys in this league who don't want to back down from somebody like DK Metcalf. Not to a young player, not to a guy who thinks his star is rising. They want to be the ones to show DK that he needs to be put in his place. And DK doesn't just play hard when he gets the ball. He plays hard when he blocks. He's trying to punish people. And that's what guys like Darius Slay, guys like Stephon Gilmore, they don't like, because no one challenges them. They've got a ton of respect from everybody else from around the league, and yet here's this DK Metcalf dude who's trying to embarrass me on national TV with his physical play, and I'm trying to – I don't want none of that. And I'm going to show that I'm not going to back down, and it usually doesn't work out for the opposing team. DK always seems to come out on top in those situations.
I mean, he's so competitive that, like, a second after you tweeted he'd be too afraid to call into the station, he did it.
Like, that's during, why I
during
did
break,
it,
he did not call during when we were on air. He called during the break, no. Moments after Jake said that. And Curtis, my favorite moment, was answering the phone, pausing.
Hey, DK.
Hey, wow, you really called. Sure, we'll put you on air. Question Jake here. Going to keep this conversation about Metcalf going because we got a lot of goods down here. One thing that you need to know, we talked about it with Mike, Jim Schwartz saying that DK Metcalf, I have no idea if it was meant to be a slight or a compliment. I'm going to take it as meaning to be a compliment with a much older coach just letting someone, a 22-year-old, know, hey, you aren't there yet. DK took it as a slight. Cut number four, here is Carroll.
Coach Schwartz can say whatever he wants. That was kind of unusual that he would bring something like that up. You know, Megatron's kind of a thing of the past. You know, not many people know about that. I mean, if he'd have said something and referred to him like the Mandalorian, you know, I think it would be a little more appropriate. I wouldn't mind calling DK the Mandalorian anytime he wants. But I don't know. You know, the coaches get to say whatever they want. I thought that was kind of surprising. But I like the way DK handled it.
Now, Pete knows for a fact, right, that he is comparing him to Calvin Johnson and not the 1984 Transformers toy.
I would like to.
Because when he said thing of the past, yes. I was like, has it been that long? But I did like the Mandalorian.
He's on the Hall
reference.
Of Fame ballot now.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, yes. He knows that it's Megatron. I think Pete's having some dry humor there. I appreciated it.
Yeah, he is. I did. And here in cut number five, I think, you know, the interesting part of the Michael Jordan Last Dance Chicago Bulls documentary that everybody was watching during COVID, Pete thought that had some influence on possibly the way DK handled this here in cut number five.
If you notice how Michael did it, Michael always found a reason. He always was – guys that have that mentality are always on the alert for give me something to juice me up and let me let me at you, you know, so that was a classic example of that, you know, what it did for him, how it fueled him. I don't know. He was fired up anyway, you know, but, you know, it's kind of the fun part of getting cranked up and you know, you kind of don't want to, you want to let that sleeping dog, you know, lay, you know, wake him up and kick him, you know, I thought it was really cool that DK took it that way. And what better than that? And had the game that he had, you know, yeah. And to answer to it. That's the cool thing.
I think for DK, somebody of that attitude is when you watch him out on the field, he plays with a purpose. He plays angry is what he plays. And you take a comment that was meant to be a compliment by Jim Schwartz, and DK used it as slight. Jim Schwartz had nothing but great things to say about DK, yet DK, all he heard was, well, you're not good enough. You're not Megatron. And I love that. That's what you want your players to have, ultimately. And I think that him being able to use that fuel and that fire and his desire to be great and to be known as one of the best, I think is the reason why you saw that happen and the reason why we found out about that comment at the end is because DK is striving for greatness, and if anybody is saying that he isn't, that personally offends him.
For the last hour, we've been talking about what we liked from this defense, what we liked from DK Metcalf. Let's go through the plays of the game, of what we love from them. That's next.